Honorable Judges of the United States Court of Appeals and this Board of Seven Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this Honorable Court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the Court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is PFT Roberson against Volvo Truck. Mr. Plott.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Again, my name is Wayne Plaza. I represent Volvo Trucks North America, a manufacturer and seller of large over-the-road trucks. I also represent another company called Volvo Transportation Services. That's a separate entity that provides maintenance services to fleet operators of these trucks and to their trailers. We look at this case and we believe it's commercially sophisticated parties negotiating for a contract that began sometime in October of 01 and went all the way through the end of January of 02. I further believe that this case is indistinguishable from the cases we've cited in our brief, especially the Impro case where Justice Easterbrook commented that presenting a common pattern...
I think you're wrong on two grounds.
Okay.
First, we're judges. Second, it doesn't make any difference who wrote the opinion of the court.
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe that that case still stands for the proposition that commercial parties should be able to memorialize what their negotiations are, state what they want to do regarding formal contracts, and then if they continue negotiations and the deal collapses, to walk away from the contract, walk away from the deal, whatever you want to call it. Roberson's amended complaint in paragraphs 13 and 14 relies, and it has not been amended, relies on a December 6th email, December 6th of 01, wherein they presented to the court the fact that there was a contract between the parties. Roberson, however, conceded at trial at page 258 of Mr. Griffin, who is the president and CEO of the company, that it was not an email that was a contract because there were many changes and things that they had to go into. We have to, first of all, I think, look at the December 6th email. It starts with a question because it was posed by Judge McCuskey that it was ambiguous. I don't believe it is ambiguous. We take the position that that is very clearly where the parties were at the time. However, it calls for formal contracts. It says, in order to move forward, it lists the whole list of things that need to be done, and formal agreement and contract signed. That in and of itself suggests that it was not a binding contract. But I think you can go further and look at it. This court cannot tell me what the specifications are for the vehicle. We know it's a VNL 610. We know a base price. But if you walk into any dealership, that can change all over the board. I doubt that they would accept a basic VNL 610.
Is anything you said so far different from anything you said to the jury?
Yes, it is, Your Honor, because we were precluded from going into some of the documents to the jury and the impact that these have on them. What we told the jury was it was not a contract. That, I agree with, is the same. When we walked through these things, we said there are missing terms. But the impact of those terms, until we heard $10 million, because at trial, our expert was not allowed to answer questions regarding the impact. All we know is we said that their contract with Freightliner was $15 million less than ours, and that they say they lost $10 million. So when we get to the compromise verdict, the verdict was exactly to the penny right in the middle. So we didn't have the opportunity until we heard these numbers to then go back and say, well, what's the impact on these? If you're missing all these specifications, if you're changing the exit clauses, if you have no maintenance obligations in this document, this December 6th email, how can you have a contract? Well, here's the impact of those. The impact of those are millions and millions of dollars. And that's why the parties' negotiations fell apart. Freightliner, Roberson came to us because they were coming off of maintenance only, not to buy trucks, maintenance only. And when we got into the maintenance terms, whether it was a cost per mile contract or whatever, what did we have to do? We had to have a separate oral contract to maintain those 225 trucks they brought to us. Wouldn't have needed that if we had had a contract in December 6th. So the impact of these Let's take the 144 differential in the trucks. It's $11.4 million. We didn't have those numbers, Your Honor. We had the difference in just buying the trucks from us, $6.2 million. But then, at closing argument, they said the one-year differential was $11 million alone. Sorry, I'm a math teacher. If I take the difference between those and multiply it out, it's under $2 million. So until we heard that, the jury didn't really have the evidence on that. And that goes to their Mr. Hanlon, who was not qualified to talk about any of these damages. Didn't prepare them, couldn't answer questions about them. When he did the calculations, he took them out for 5 years. So we're saying that the missing terms in this December 6th email are so drastic, and they had the impact of money to both sides. And as Mr. Griffin said, we wanted the contract that was economically feasible for both parties. We didn't have that, Your Honor. If you go to December 21st, two documents. We signed those. No question about them. They set forth boilerplate terminology. One of them, the used truck trade agreements, mentions the vehicle specification outline, not there. What were these 900 vehicles supposed to look like when we bring them in? We're giving them $29,000 in trade. Are they burned out? Or is there just a dent on them? Are they 100,000 miles? There's nothing there in the December 21st that embellishes the December 6th. Likewise, we go to the second document there, the Vehicle Service Administration Agreement, and once again, Your Honor, and this we did ask the jury, so I'm glad you asked that. What are the obligations for maintenance? They're not there. They're just not there. Are we supposed to replace all the wheels on the tires on the trailers? Millions of dollars, $3 million a year. Doesn't say. What if we don't do it? If you step back and say, if Volvo was suing them, what would they say? Well, we never signed anything. We said we required formal contracts because this is an $84 million transaction over multiple years. So when you look at those two documents, it still doesn't get us any farther. As Mr. Griffin said at page 266 and 267, all of these factors were extremely important pricing obligations for both parties. The negotiations started basically because they were losing maintenance. They fell down because of maintenance. And if we apply the law of Ocean Atlantic, AMPRO, I think that, as the court said in Magellanus, there's no talismanic language. It didn't have to say subject to, as Roberson now says we had to. It didn't say contingent upon, but it did say in order to move forward, formal agreements and contracts signed. Why? Because it's a multi-year $84 million transaction. And that's why the parties needed to know just what they were supposed to do for this $84 million. And what kind of trucks were we supposed to take back and in trade? Where this case went a little bit awry and where we had a problem was, as I said, they said the December 6th was the contract. We said no. Then Judge McCuskey said, he denied our Rule 50 motion and said, under Magellanus, we're going to let them testify. And then they testified. It opened up the floodgates, Your Honor. They testified about fraud, about bait and switch. They testified about a whole host of things, which allowed the jury to not determine if there was intent to be bound based upon the writings, not to talk about the negotiations around it, which is what the Ocean Atlantic and Impro say we're supposed to do. It allowed all this other subjective information in. And what did it do? Some examples. Quote, it was absolutely a done deal before January 18th. Well, I thought it was a done deal on December 6th. The email, that's page 179 of the transcript, Mr. Griffin. The 12-6 email was not the contract, it was the deal. We heard that word in the transcript, it's there over and over and over, the deal, the deal, the deal. We were working toward a deal, and the contracts were supposed to show what those were. But they were so incomplete, he even said that he wouldn't sign them until they were all final. Well, there's another reason why he didn't sign them. If he'd have signed those contracts with us to buy 886 trucks, 75 of them without any trade-ins for $6.5 million, he still had his contract, Roberson still had his contract with Freightliner. They said the contract to buy the trucks and trade the trucks was still there. They just said they exercised the right to terminate the maintenance. That became a critical factor to them. And we went from the 120 days to cancel the contract to a 1 year and 120 days to cancel contract. That provision plus then we can get out of the other contract too. So they didn't wind up with the situation where they were with Freightliner. We can cancel maintenance, but we still have to buy your trucks. No. If you're out of one, you're out of the other. And that was mutual. If they cancel one side, we could cancel the other. Those became extremely critical terms affecting the pricing. Therefore, when they were asked by Judge McCuskey at the end of the case, well, counsel, is there anything else you would like to present? Any documents, any testimony? Quote, we got it all in, and they certainly did. We went way beyond Magdalena's. We got in all this subjective of I believe, I thought, those people and so forth. Doing conduct is with Volvo is impossible. Deceptive conduct is their way of doing business. The bait and switch. They snuck in this administrative fee and so forth. This was a breach of contract case. The judge was supposed to hear the other part. The jury's decision here is so much a compromise, I can't think of a better case. Right exactly down the middle to the penny. And where's the proof in the pudding? We objected to the verdict form.
A lot of jury verdicts are compromised.
Yes, Your Honor, but in this case, we objected to the verdict form. If you start with the verdict form, we said, why are you tying Volvo trucks and Volvo transportation together? If we had a contract on December 6th, there was no guarantee. Until late January, when we signed on January 23rd, we signed the guarantee, Volvo trucks guaranteed Volvo transportation's performance. Yes, they're related companies, but they still have separate companies. So now we've got a verdict that says, Volvo trucks, did you sell them a truck? Well, they didn't buy any. They didn't trade any in. What did we do wrong? Volvo Transportation Services, well, you changed the CPM, cost per mile contract, and that's where you breached your contract. I don't see where they breached the contract because the jury's decided Volvo receives 100% on their counterclaim. The amount due on the oral contract, costing contract, the service. Why? Until we entered a CPM contract. Everything along the way suggests there was no contract. They didn't sign them. First of all, it was the email says we need contracts. They never signed them. They never accepted them. And the jury finding exactly one half of the credit. The verdict should have formed should have been here's the award minus the credits they admitted we were owed, $529,000. No, the jury gave us half of the $529,000, too. I think that suggests, Your Honor, that from day one, about day two, when the court denied our motion, and all this came in, we were far beyond the Ocean Atlantic cases and so forth.
What are, in your opinion, are the two most important aspects of this contract, if it was a contract?
Two most important aspects are the cost per mile and what was going to be done for that cost per mile. Because when they signed the addendum to the existing contract with Freightliner, not a new contract, the addendum, they got it at 3.85, and that was the critical factor to them. Our December 6th email said 4.2 and 5.2 cents. Now that sounds like a small amount of money. But when you have 120,000 miles per year...
When you're talking about cost per mile, you're talking about the trade-in formula?
No. The CPM, the cost per mile, what we're going to charge you to maintain your
truck.
That's
for maintenance. Okay.
For maintenance.
There are two separate questions, as I understand it, then. One is how much per mile for maintenance.
Yes.
And the other is what formula, including mileage, is going to be used to figure out trade-in value?
Well, I think, to answer the question, the second most important part, what are the obligations? Can a truck be burned out? Can we refuse it? What is it going to be? Because that's going to affect the pricing. You have to remember, everything affects the pricing. And if you can't determine what the obligations are, and if you don't know what the CPM is, yes, the two most important, in my mind, those are the most two important obligations. Because that's what the thing was all about. The truck pricing on the truck, we could give them a VNL 610. That price, no problem. They might not want to buy it. They were very concerned about the condition of their trucks. Okay, didn't have a radio, didn't have power windows, whatever, fine. But they never ordered one. Never ordered one, not one truck. So Volvo Truck sits back and said, okay. So it broke down in those 2 points, Your Honor. They had plenty of opportunities, and in our brief, we say that even on January 18th, they say we agree with these documents, and they still don't sign them. Unless this court is going to overrule Ocean Atlantic, overrule IMPO, Cohn, Magellanus, Haslin, Dawson, all the cases we've cited that allow parties to negotiate their transaction, we have a completely different case. We're going to change the law here. It's no longer our parties going to know what they can go into and do and so forth. I'm not suggesting that parties can't be bound by preliminary writings, but this email is so wanting in information that it cannot be enforced. And I ask you to turn it around and say, if we were to sue them on this contract, what would they be saying? The very same thing I'm saying here. And that's what confused the jury. Volvo Trucks never failed to sell a truck. Never failed to do anything. That guarantee was not in place until January 23rd. The missing terms in December 21st document weren't even available to Suzanne Warren to sign them. Your Honor, I suggest that as to our waiver argument, we have to keep in mind that Rule 28 says that you must tell this court several things, and one of which is the law that you're relying upon. They cited absolutely no law in their cross-claim. It was as frivolous then as it is now. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Fawcett. Mr. Hoft.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Stephen Haft, and along with Joseph Fisher, sitting at table, we represented Roberson. Mr. Plaza rhetorically asked you what did Volvo do wrong, and the answer was it made a contract and it didn't perform. There were a number of issues raised in the briefs. Most deal with the weight and sufficiency of the evidence. I think those are adequately addressed in the briefs unless you have questions. The one issue that's raised and that Mr. Plaza just devoted most of his time to is the question regarding whether or not the trial judge properly allowed the jury to decide if there was a contract. Illinois law, as followed by this court, is clear. The existence and terms of the contract are typically allowed to the jury to decide. It is only if it is clear from the evidence that it unambiguously states that there is no agreement, there's no intent to be bound, that you cannot allow the jury to decide the terms and the existence of the contract. In the Nitrin case, the Illinois Appellate Court said, where a case turns upon the proper conclusions to be drawn from a series of letters.
Why should we care about that? And the allocation between judge and jury is a question for the forum. It's not governed by federal law, not by Illinois law.
Your Honor, I respectfully believe that in terms of the formation of contract and parole evidence rule, that would be Illinois law that controls.
No, it doesn't. As I say, the allocation of issues between judge and jury is a question for forum law.
I understand, but I, without arguing too much, Your Honor, I believe
that the
question
of... You don't want to argue with correct propositions of law. Just take it and run with it.
The point is, Your Honor, that the jury is to decide if there's any ambiguity, whether or not a contract exists, and what its terms were.
And what federal authority do you rely on for that proposition?
Your Honor, I would look at the Magellanus case, actually the Ocean Atlantic case, the Hanley-Dawson case. They all reflect the law, which is that unless it's clear that no reasonable person could differ, that the parties' documents and conduct show unambiguously there was no intent to be bound, then the issue should go to the jury. In this case, the trial judge properly ruled...
Certainly not the way we formulated the issue in MPRO and, for example, Illinois Central Light Company against Consolidation Coal. In fact, in Illinois Light, we said that a question of this nature shouldn't go to the jury unless it's actually quite clear from the papers that the parties have really formed their contract.
Your Honor,
we suggested that ambiguities would be resolved against treating preliminary documents as binding.
Your Honor, these are not preliminary documents.
Documents. The parties continue negotiating for another 2 months, and your client then refused to sign the resulting document. So the December 6th email is certainly preliminary. It doesn't cover all the issues. You agree with that. And the parties did continue negotiating. Now, one, there is certainly room for preliminary agreement on issues A, B, and C, and more negotiation later on D and E. That's certainly something parties can agree to do. But we said in Illinois Central Light, and I think in IMPRO, that whether that's been done is something that really needs to be demonstrated before the question goes to the jury. We did not adopt in those cases the principle that if it's conceivable that an agreement was reached, it's all a jury issue. Now, maybe there's some federal authority you're relying on for a contrary proposition. Maybe we've got an internal conflict in our cases. But I think you need to rely on some.
Let me address three things you said, Your Honor. First of all, there were no continuing negotiations after December 6th. They documented the deal in 2 weeks. There was no disagreement on the terms. The terms that were finally produced through a writing were consistent with December 6th. And after December 21st, when the parties were on the phone and agreed on the words of the document...
So you never negotiated after December 6th on the cost per mile?
Not until after January 18, when we were told the deal wouldn't be held.
Well,
we were told
January 18 is after December 6th, so you did negotiate on that issue.
After they told us the deal was over, Your Honor. After we were told there would be no deal and the terms were agreed to on December 6th, but between
December... What were the terms and conditions on that? Cost per mile that were agreed to on December 6th.
Set forth, Your Honor, in Plans Exhibit 73. It was new Volvo units, 60 months, 4.2 cents per mile, includes any fixed fee. Existing non-Volvo units, 36 to 48 months, 5.2 cents per mile, includes fixed fee. Trailers, $90 a trailer per month. And those numbers were repeated time and time again between December 6th and January 8th, 17, actually, when we received another set of documents different than the ones before.
What was the trade-in formula agreed on December 6th?
The trade-in, Your Honor, if you look at the truck pricing and the price and the trade-back, and then you look at depreciation cost per mile, that tells you the trade-in value after 60 months, because what they do is just do a simple mathematical computation over the 60 months. So if you take the price and there's your trade back of $29,100, that would be the price we'd get after 60 months for those new trucks.
I might be naive here, but you think two sophisticated parties, a multi-year deal involving millions and millions of dollars, would have perhaps one document that would memorialize all these terms and conditions, and you're relying on this December 6th email as that document or as final conclusive proof that there's a valid contract. That seems a little odd.
Your Honor, if I could address that, the December 6th email sets forth the essential terms of the parties' agreement. It was not the subject to anything else. But there were four documents that were contemplated. And by December 21st, the terms of those agreements, of those documents were all agreed to. Two were signed by Volvo and sent to us. And on January 10, we were told the other two documents, which we had seen, had been approved by Volvo's legal and financial staff. So you're right. There needs to be more documentation that had been agreed to by December 21st. We received two signed on January 4th. And the other two, we were told, have been approved by Volvo Legal and Financial on January 10th. The December 6th email does say, to move forward, we'll need additional documents. And our people agreed that they understood there would be signed contracts down the road. But the issue here is not whether there were additional signed documents contemplated later. The issue is, was the agreement subject to the final execution of those contracts? And there's nothing in the documents that call for that. There's nothing in the testimony about that. Between December 6th and January 17th, when Volvo decided to change the terms of the deal, never once did they say, without the contracts, you have no deal. Instead, they helped us begin transitioning to a Volvo fleet. They provided us with training materials, and on January 15th, they started taking in our tractors for service. So, you're right.
Do you have any comment, by the way, on Central Illinois Light?
I don't.
Your position is very similar to that of the plaintiff in that case. Because in that case, where the contract was supposedly going to be for requirements of coal for 5 years, the defendant was actually delivering coal. And the plaintiff said, well, that's evidence enough that there was a contract. And we held otherwise.
That is not our only evidence, Your Honor. That's one piece of evidence.
You didn't have any evidence about coal, I will grant. But
I agree with that, Your Honor.
There was an agreement in Central Illinois on some terms, and there was actual deliveries of coal. And we held that even that was not enough to create a jury issue on whether a contract had been formed.
Your Honor, I don't believe we had only agreement on some terms. We had an agreement on the essential terms.
No.
The terms that were reflected later, as an example, Volvo contended that one of the essential things missing from the December 6th email and thereafter was a purchase order, and that they would not sell us trucks without a purchase order. They claimed that was a key missing term. And yet, in a trial, Mr. Tedder, their vice president of fleet sales, testified that a purchase order was essential. And that's why there was no deal why he wouldn't sell trucks. Yet, on cross-examination, I showed him Mr. Dawson's package of January 23, which was sent to us, in which they said was a complete set of documents, and had we signed them, we would have had a contract. And I asked Mr. Tedder to find the purchase order. There was none in that package. He then admitted a purchase order wasn't necessary. And I believe, Your Honor, that there may be additional terms that the parties contemplate. But whether those are necessary terms, whether they're the kinds of terms that go to the core of the agreement or terms that will be worked out later, is something for the jury to decide. When you look at the behavior in this case, when you look at the statements that were made by Volvo on December 6th, in addition to the email, when you look at the admissions by Mr. Tedder, who said on December 6th we had an oral agreement at least. Mr. McNamara, who handled the negotiations, testified there was an oral agreement on December 6th with respect to new trucks, used trucks, and maintenance. We got the call from Mr. Jijoux on December 6th, the president of Volvo, congratulating us on the business. So it's not just the December 6th email. That does set forth what we believe are the essential terms the parties agreed to and that were never changed until Volvo pulled the plug. But we have a lot of other evidence of the parties' intent and their intent to be bound. I think this case fits well in comparison between the Hanley-Dawson case and the Emperor case. In Emperor, it was clear, it was written, that the agreement was subject to both the execution of a final contract and approval from the board and shareholders of the buyer. In this case, we already were told there was approval from Volvo's senior management. No further approval was needed, and Mr. McNamara testified, in fact, that approval had been given before he sent his December 6th email. Second, the email does not say that it's subject to anything, and never once during that 6 weeks did Volvo say, where are the signed documents? Where are the signed contracts? Now, you raise a question about two sophisticated parties, Your Honor. If Volvo, who the testimony was in late 2001, if order boards were empty, it didn't have business. This was an $84 million contract. A commercially sophisticated party who truly believed that there was no contract until documents were written and signed, no salesman would walk out the door and not come back for 6 weeks without saying, I need your signature on the contract. They believed there was an agreement as well. It was not until Mr. Alsterholm, their CFO, had second thoughts about what he had approved on December 6th, and he got in touch with Mr. Dawson in rather firm language and told him this deal was not going to go ahead, that Volvo changed his mind. But in terms of sophisticated parties, if there was no deal, Volvo would have been knocking on our door. They needed to fill their order boards. And they would have said, we need your signature. We can't do anything until you sign these documents. That never occurred. Never once were we asked by Volvo, where are the signed documents? In fact, we were pressing them to get the documents to make sure they conformed to the deal. The issue about subjective intent that was raised by Mr. Plaza, the testimony that was given, there was no objection to it during the course of the trial. Some of the citations they provide in their brief actually are cross-examination of our witnesses by the Volvo lawyers, where they elicited information about what our people believed. The jury was instructed that it should ignore any evidence of purely subjective belief. And we had ample evidence of objective evidence of what the parties believed, both in terms of the documents and the conversations between the parties, to support the finding of a contract. Finally, Your Honor, I would like to address one point Mr. Plaz made about missing terms with respect to maintenance and used truck agreements. As another example of what they claim to be were the missing terms, they cite to you the fact that the maintenance agreement and the used truck agreement didn't have all the attachments. Those are the documents they signed and sent to us on December 21. So what they would have you believe, as they tried to have the jury believe, was that they signed contract documents which they sent to us for signature, but when we tried to hold them to those documents, they claimed those documents were missing necessary attachments. Again, commercially reasonable parties, why would Volvo send to us contract documents signed by Volvo, which they now claim were missing key parts? That is something Volvo would have attached to the documents that they sent them. Finally, Your Honor, one point to correct, and it permeates the brief. The idea was that somehow Roberson was playing off Freightliner against Volvo. I want to correct something Mr. Plaza said. The problem with Freightliner didn't come out of maintenance. The evidence at trial was that Freightliner told us they wouldn't honor the residual values in the contract. And when my client said, you're going to do what you promised, then they pulled the plug on maintenance. And then my client sued them. So this is not simply a maintenance issue. This was a full-blown problem for my client, which led it to switch its entire business from Freightliner to Volvo. That's why it was so important to my client to get the deal done. And while my client would not be negotiating through January 15th, when he had to get maintenance for 250 tractors. Your Honor, we ask that you affirm the jury's verdict. If you have any further questions, otherwise, I've completed my presentation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Plaza?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much. At least we're now back to the December 6th email. The brief took us to December 21st, as he argued that they at least had a contract by that date to the jury. And now the brief goes into an oral contract. I'm glad to see that's finally put to rest. If we pull the plug on this deal, it could be canceled in 120 days. End of conversation. Not $10 million worth of damages, 4 months. End of conversation, if there was a contract. There was no contract. There was nothing there. Negotiations continued. They continued. The documents on December 21st we signed. We will stick to those to this day. We said that to the jury. The problem is, when you read them, they call for Schedule A's. Roberson had to give us Schedule A's, because Schedule A's tell us what the trucks are, how old they are, what their VIN number is. We can go on the computer and look them up, what their condition is. We had no idea. We've never serviced their fleet of Navistars and other trucks that they had. So we needed those Schedule A's until we had those. And if you look at the Schedule A's, they're part of the record, the supplemental appendix. That's where all the terms and conditions of the obligations are. Not in the other contracts, not in those December 21st documents. They refer to something that yet had to come from them and then be prepared. So I'm not so sure where the master agreement then fits in, because they drafted it. As Your Honor asked, wouldn't you expect one contract? I think you would, Your Honor. Here is the $84 million contract, they say. Right here. Here, exhibit number 16, is the contract sent to them on January 23rd. And then when they sign with Freightliner, exhibit 22 on supplemental appendix, here's the contract with them, which is just an addendum to their existing contract. The question posed is that...
It's not clear whether that gets you very far, unless what you're making is an argument that contract law is a full employment clause for lawyers. But until you've paid the lawyers several hundred dollars an hour for drafting something really long, it can't be binding.
Not at all, Your Honor. What I'm saying is contract law...
Well, I don't understand what the thickness has to do with anything.
It shows that the parties... Well, he said that the parties are sophisticated. Why didn't we ask them for signed contracts?
I think we're back to Judge Evans's question. The kind of argument you're making is a jury speech. It's not a legal argument. You're in the wrong forum for a jury speech.
Well, Your Honor, if the law here... We think that December 6th email, which we are at, showed clearly on its face no intent to be bound, and that significant terms are missing. We do not believe that anything outside the case law we cited, and for this reason, we do not have the cross appeal before you. We ask that the verdict be reversed in its entirety, and the minimum, a new trial on damages. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.